Roger.
Let's go down by the river and watch the boat.
You go if you want to, Will. I want to stay here by the hotel and watch the people.
Oh, they're just a bunch of grown-ups.
Sure, but they're funny just the same. There's one great big man who's supposed to be a famous actor in New York. And he comes every year at this time to take those old stinky mineral baths. And in between baths, he goes over to the White House and gets drunk. What's so funny about that? Nearly everybody who comes here gets drunk.
Alcoholics Anonymous, that unique organization of ex-drinkers, dedicates this program to the men and women who have successfully returned from the outer rim of living to a new way of life. Theirs are the stories of personal victories over the disease that is alcoholism, an obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body. Alcoholics Anonymous brings you the true story of a man we've named Roger Kelly. His is the story of a man who traces his craving for liquor back to his childhood and was only successful in overcoming this obsession after he adopted a new way of life.
Well, if you won't come with me down to the river, I'm going anyway.
Go ahead, see if I care.
But remember what Mother said. We gotta be home for supper at 5 o'clock sharp.
But I should love to go there for tea. I think it would be absolutely stunning.
Oh, my lady, the place will gain you fame if you go there.
How nicely you say things, George.
Now, if we can just find someone who can direct us there.
Hello.
Why, it's Roger. How are you today?
Just fine.
Say, I'll bet you know the place we're looking for. Miss Delaney and I have heard of a large white colonial inn by the riverbank. They serve tea every afternoon. And there's a string orchestra.
Oh, sure. I know where that is. Want me to show you?
Oh, how nice of you. What's your name, dear boy?
Roger Kelly.
Oh, what a manly name.
Are you an actress?
Well, yes.
Roger, this is Miss Delaney. Miss Margaret Delaney. A toast of Broadway and the most beautiful woman in the world. Don't you agree?
Oh, she's pretty, all right. But my mother's prettier.
Dear boy.
Well, then I'll have to meet your mother.
Well, if you want to go to the River Garden, you'll have to come now, because I got to be home for supper at 5.
And I wish you could have seen Mrs. Drake. She said a hat was trimmed with a bird of paradise, but it looked more like a vulture from the Siberian waste to me.
I wish you'd be quiet, Jane, when I'm eating. It disturbs my digestion.
Oh, nonsense, Henry. A gay atmosphere at the supper table aids digestion. I read that someplace.
That's what comes of women knowing how to read.
Oh.
Well, eat your dinner.
Yes, sir. Hey, you know who I met today? A real actress from New York.
Oh, dear, Roger. I really don't think you ought to be associating with such people.
Who was she, Roger?
Miss Margaret Delaney. And she was with that guy who won $1,000 gambling at the hotel the other night.
Oh, Roger.
But Father told us about that. Didn't you, Father?
I told your mother. Little children should be seen and not heard. Sometimes they shouldn't hear either.
Henry, did you see Mr. Miller today?
I did. And he's being entirely unreasonable.
Will, give me the pepper.
Why?
Never mind why. Just give it a
minute. As if we could do it on the property mortgage.
Maybe he'd buy it from
me. Here. Now, why? And don't tell. Are you going to fake another cold? Can you think of a better way to give another...
Just give us a sugar cat?
No, what for? What would we want with it? Here, what's going on? What's all that racket?
I'm sneezing.
Oh, dear. You must be coming down with another cold.
Seems to me he's always coming down with a cold.
Now, don't be unsympathetic, Henry. This is pneumonia weather.
Oh,
dear. While Matt is bringing in the dessert, I'm going to fix you a good, strong eggnog, laced with whiskers.
Was
nothing short of miraculous, the way in which my pepper-induced sneezes were cured by sugar tits or whiskey eggnog. They gave me a taste for liquor, but my real craving for it came shortly after my arrival home from school one day.
But, Doctor, what can I do to protect the other children? The boys had several of their friends over here for dinner last night, and they've all been exposed.
You better have someone warn their mothers and prescribe a preventive for them. Black diphtheria is nothing to fool around with.
Oh, I know. What can I do to keep Roger from getting it?
The best thing I know is to give him an ounce of whiskey every hour until Will's past the danger point.
Oh.
Here's the boy now.
Oh, Roger, do you feel all right?
Sure. Hello, Mother. Float out the right way.
Roger, now, take your things off. I want you to drink a little whiskey. I'll fix it for you right now.
Well, I'm going back upstairs and check Will's pulse.
What's the matter, Mother?
Oh, it's Will. Dr. White says he has black diphtheria.
Gosh. Is he going to die?
Oh, Roger, don't even think such a thing. Here, drink this whiskey. And Dr. White says you're to drink an ounce every hour.
Oh, boy.
Now, Roger, this whiskey is to keep you from getting black diphtheria. And that's the only reason I'm giving it to you. Oh, wait a minute. I'll get you some water to drink with it.
Oh, that's all right, Mother. I don't need any water. I like the taste of it.
Gracious, Roger. Well, you didn't even choke on it. Why, even your father doesn't drink whiskey like that.
My younger brother was buried within the next 24 hours. 24 hours I'll remember all my life. Not only because of the tragedy of his sudden fatal illness, but because in that brief span of time, I became a confirmed alcoholic. I liked the tingling sensation of the whiskey coursing through my veins. I knew it for what it was to become, my drink. When it came time for me to go away to college, I chose to attend a university in New York. I remember two events from that period. One was that I had a drink in every gin mill and saloon on Broadway, from the Battery to Yonkers. The other was the night I graduated from college when I went on the stage to receive my sheepskin.
Alan Hamilton. My congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Roger Kelly. Roger Kelly.
I'm coming. That's a big rush anyway. You think a guy...
Are you ill? Huh? Would you like some assistance?
I'm all right.
You look a little pale. Here, take your sheepskin. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And now we can spend all our time drinking. No more interruptions. Just all the time drink. Lovely bull.
Right at the moment, though, Rajo Kala, I have had enough. I am going to take my hard-earned sheepskin home and frame it. And then I'm going to bed. Come on, finish your shot. I'm tired.
Okay.
Hey. Somebody swiped my cap and gown. Where's my sheepskin?
I don't know. It's not here.
I guess I must have left it in some bar.
Oh, well, I can't look for it tomorrow.
We'll cover the same old ground all over again tomorrow anyway.
Let's have just one more nightcap and then
And then...
I guess my lost sheepskin should have read graduated cum laude in the art of drinking whiskey.
For well over 40 years, the man we've named Roger Kelly was an excessive drinker. To tell you how he finally curbed this obsession, he's here now to be interviewed by the Reverend Oscar G. Sterrett, minister of Central Methodist Church. Mr. Sterrett.
Did your drinking get you into any trouble?
Not until about 7 years ago. Then justice began to catch up with me. When the city offered me hospitalization at the poorhouse, I decided I was through, and I tried the easy way out. When that didn't work, I decided I'd have to play the game differently.
Did you then contact Alcoholics Anonymous?
Well, not exactly. I received a letter from a stranger, a woman at that, saying she was an ex-drunk and knew I was a drunk. She suggested I attend a meeting, and I went, although I had no idea it had anything to do with stopping drinking.
Was it an AA meeting?
It was. I wasn't convinced then that AA could help me, but everything I heard that night stayed with me, and I finally had to admit to myself that the only way I'd ever find sobriety would be by joining AA.
As a minister, I'm especially interested in Alcoholics Anonymous because, to me, this organization is a marvelous example of practical Christianity. It gets to the root of the alcoholic's problem by offering him an understanding fellowship that non-alcoholics simply cannot offer, no matter how good their intentions. Certainly, AA should be commended and encouraged by everyone in their great undertaking and achievement.
Well, thank you, Mr. Oscar G. Sterrett, for appearing as interviewer. And so, another alcoholic returns to normal living thanks to the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. This organization is non-profit, non-sectarian, and non-political. It takes no stand whatever on the wet or dry issues. Remember, alcoholism is a disease. You need help to conquer it, just as you'd need help if you had tuberculosis. So if you have a drinking problem and are interested in finding help, sit down now and write for information to Alcoholics Anonymous in care of this station. Sign your name, address, and telephone number, and send your note to Alcoholics Anonymous in care of the station to which you are listening. This program, produced by WWJ, the Detroit News, was broadcast in the public interest. Alcoholics Anonymous will bring you the true story of another member of their unique organization of ex-drinkers again next week. We invite you to be with us then.
Never take a drink. I swear.
Alcoholics Anonymous, that unique organization of ex-drinkers, dedicates this program to the men and women who have successfully returned from the outer rim of living to a new way of life. Theirs are the stories of personal victories over the disease that is alcoholism, an obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body. Alcoholics Anonymous brings you the true story of a man we've named Andrew Nolan. His is the story of an alcoholic who was never a social drinker, but with whom liquor was an obsession from the first time he took a drink. Fortunately, he found in time the personal ability to conquer this craving through the following of a new way of life.
We lived in an eastern textile town. My father worked at the mill, and I was destined to work there, too. Wages were small, too small to support a family, despite the fact that my father worked steadily. With another man, that fact would be astonishing. It was not with my father, because he was an alcoholic. And as his son, I swore I'd never take a drink. By the time I was 14, I was considered old enough to stop school and go to work in the mill. For pitifully small wages, we worked 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. And by the time I was 18, I had decided that this was not the life for me.
Hey, did you see George this afternoon, Andy? He got his hand caught in a power loom. He won't be back working in the mill.
I saw him. George always hated the mill. He said he'd get out of working there.
You talk bitter, Andy. You don't like the mill either, do you?
No, I don't.
You don't talk much like you used to. You used to run with a gang. Now we don't see you anymore. What you been doing?
Working.
I know that, but I don't mean the mill. What do you do when you go home nights? Come on and tell me, Andy. I won't tell nobody.
I don't care if you tell or not. I'm going to night school. I want to finish high school.
Finish school? Who wants to study? You'll never be a rich man or anything like that. You're just going to work in the mill like all the rest of us.
That's why I'm doing it. I don't want to work 10 hours a day in the mill any longer than I can help. After I finish high school, I'm going on to the School of Design. I'm going to try to do better than the rest of us have done.
I suppose you'll go all high and mighty on it. Too good for any of us with all your schooling. I suppose you're going to own the mill someday and be our boss.
Yes, maybe I will.
I don't know where you get all your big ideas. You're just trying to buck fate going to school and trying to make something big out of yourself. I bet 2 years from now you'll still be in the mill, working right along with the rest of us, same as always.
2 years from now I might be working in the mill, all right, but not with the rest of you. I got ideas that are going to pay off. Just wait and see. I finished high school and then went on to the School of Design, graduating in textile design. I was working in the mill, but as foreman of the weave shop in one of the largest silk mills. I married, and we were very happy. My job held promise of even better positions. I still held my youthful promise to myself never to drink. I'd never even had a glass of beer. And as I waited in the hospital for the birth of our first child, my world was everything I'd ever hoped it would be.
You ought to sit down. You're going to wear yourself out pacing up and down like that.
Isn't your wife in there, too?
Sure, but this is our second. Now, take it easy. You're making me nervous, too.
It's taking awfully long. She's been there over an hour.
Oh, that's nothing. Your wife will be all right.
Mr. Harding?
Yeah, that's me. What is it? Is my wife all right?
Now who's nervous?
You can go in just a few minutes and see your wife. You have a daughter.
A daughter? Oh, boy, you hear that? I have a daughter.
That's great. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, old man. Hope you don't have to wait much longer.
Just a minute, nurse.
Yes?
Isn't there any news about my wife? Mrs. Nolan. It's been awfully long.
Well, that's sometimes the way with a first baby. I'll let you know the minute I hear.
Oh, Dr. Johnson. How is she? How's my wife? How's the baby?
I'm sorry, Mr. Doolin. I'm afraid I have some bad news.
Baby, something happened to the baby? But my wife's all right.
I'm sorry. It was one of those rare cases that we just couldn't foresee. Your wife passed away.
What?
We did everything we could to save her, but we couldn't do enough.
My wife? Oh. No, it isn't true. I don't believe it. I want to see her. Let me see
her.
Yes,
Mr. Nolan. It's a terrible shock, I know. But it is true. But your son's alive. You have a son, Mr. Nolan.
A son?
Yes.
He's all right.
Well, He's alive, but he'll be crippled. The instrument, it was a very difficult birth.
Oh.
Wouldn't you like to see him?
Yes. I'd like to see my son. My mind was a blank. Nothing mattered. Nothing. My nerves wouldn't let me sleep. I was mentally and physically exhausted. One night when I couldn't sleep, I got up, dressed, and went for a walk, hoping to get so tired that I'd at last be able to rest.
Well, Andy.
Huh?
What are you doing out this late?
Oh, hello, Paul.
It's kind of late to be out strolling.
What time is it?
Oh, about 1:30. Having trouble sleeping?
Oh, a little. I thought a little fresh air might help.
I heard about your wife and baby, Andy. I was darn sorry. That's a pretty stiff jolt for a man to take. I don't wonder you're out walking like this.
I can't seem to get over it. You didn't know my wife. She was a pretty thing. Pale yellow hair, deep blue eyes, like a baby. She was so happy about the baby and all. We were going to build a little house outside of town as soon as we saved up enough.
It's so easy to say, don't let it get you down, and all the other bromides. They don't help much, do they?
No, not much. But I think you understand better than most people at that, Paul.
I think there's one thing that might help you tonight, Andy. I know you're not a drinking man. In fact, I know you don't really think much of me because I drink and sometimes have to take time off from work. But I wish you'd let me take you to Joe's tonight.
Joe? Joe who?
Oh, I don't know his last name. But he has a blind pig down the road away. You come and let me buy you a drink. It'll make you relax and you'll be able to sleep. No kidding.
I guess maybe you're right, Paul. I guess maybe this is one night I really could use a drink.
Anything else? I gotta close up pretty soon. It's getting late.
We'll be going after this, Joe.
If you're gonna close, bring me a bottle, and we'll finish it outside. But first, bring me another one like this one, only twice as strong.
You mean a double?
Is that what I mean, Paul?
Well, yeah, but no more for me, Joe. I can see where I'm going to have to take my friend here home.
I'll bring you a double, but I can't sell you no bottle.
Look here, Andy. You're going to get drunk.
Sure I am. And I'm going to keep on drinking until I pass out. You know, I had you all wrong, Paul. I didn't used to like you. Didn't like you at all. But I changed my mind. You're all right. You knew that what I needed was a drink.
And so the man we've named Andrew Nolan in this true story became an alcoholic. To tell you how he finally found the cure for his obsession, he's here now to be interviewed by the Reverend H.F. Hensick, pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Dearborn. Mr. Hensick.
Did your first experience with liquor definitely contribute to your obsession for drinking?
Yes, it did. From being a teetotaler, I became an alcoholic with the first drink I took. I suppose the fact that I was mentally and physically exhausted and under the strain imposed by grief had something to do with the impact of the liquor upon my senses.
Did you have any luck at all in combating this obsession?
Through the years, I'd fight off the craving for maybe 3 or 4 months at a time, but the day would always come when my desire for drink was stronger than my desire to keep sober.
Do you still have that desire for a drink now that you're a member of AA?
I did at first. We all do, but not anymore. The desire to stay sober now is as strong or stronger than the old desire to drink.
Basically, AA holds to the premise that it takes an alcoholic to cure another alcoholic. In that sense, it would seem that we non-alcoholics can't do much to help those who are suffering so terribly from this disease. But there is something we can do to help them. Instead of reading the riot act to our friends and relatives when they drink too much, we can treat alcoholism understandingly as the disease that it is, and we can tell them about Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the proper approach to the solution of one of mankind's worst problems.
Well, thank you, Reverend H.F. Hensick, for appearing as interviewer. And so, another alcoholic returns to a normal and useful place in society thanks to the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. This organization is non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian. It takes no stand whatever on the wet or dry issues. Remember, alcoholism is a disease. You need help to conquer it, just as you'd need help if you had tuberculosis. So, if you have a drinking problem and are interested in finding help, write now to Alcoholics Anonymous, in care of this station. Sign your name, address, and telephone number, and send your note to Alcoholics Anonymous, in care of the station to which you are listening. This program, produced by WWJ, the Detroit News, was broadcast in the public interest. Alcoholics Anonymous will bring you the true story of another member of their unique organization of ex-drinkers, next week at the same time. We invite you to be with us then.
Better cab company.
This Ed?
Yeah, who's it? Dennis?
Yeah, say Ed, the cab's frozen stiff. Can't move it.
You've been drinking.
Yeah. I guess I fell asleep.
Where are you now?
Down by the Northwestern Depot.
Stay right there. I'll be down with the tow truck in a few minutes. Yeah, the best darn cab driver I've ever had working for me. But he can't leave booze alone. Every cent he makes goes for whiskey.
Alcoholics Anonymous, that unique organization of ex-drinkers, dedicate this program to the men and women who have successfully returned from the outer rim of living to a new way of life. Theirs are the stories of personal victories over the disease that is alcoholism, an obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body. Alcoholics Anonymous brings you the true story of a man whom we'll call Dennis O'Brien. Each opportunity given him for advancement only brought trouble until he found the key that opened a tomorrow of unlimited promise for him.
Dennis O'Brien worked for me for several years over in Chicago for Abba Cab Company. He made a lot of money for us, for himself. Only it didn't do him much good because he spent it all for liquor. I used to wonder why. He'd stop drinking for a while, then he'd be off on another bender. So I used to talk to Dennis, ask him about his background, try to figure out why he drank. Well, it seems that he came from a small town in Pennsylvania where he carved out an early reputation for himself when he was only 16 by getting drunk at a dance. Then a couple of years later, when he was working in a machine shop...
Come back to Erin, my morning, my morning. Come back around to the land of my birth.
Hey, Dennis!
Come with the sheriff.
Dennis!
Yeah?
You're going to the dance tonight?
Sure, with Mary Gregory.
I thought her old man said she couldn't go with you.
Ah, you've been listening to those old gossips again. Sure, Mary and I are going.
Hey, watch the way you handle that blade. You're going to cut off your hand.
Will you be watching your own business and let me be watching mine?
Dennis, hey, take it easy. Be careful. Watch out!
Ah!
Stop the wheel! Stop the wheel accident! Get a doctor! Get a doctor, quick!
And it was only a matter of minutes before the tongue started wagging.
Did you just see old Doc Herbert run by? There's been an accident at that tool shop. It was that young Dennis O'Brien. They say he's hurt bad.
Four fingers cut right off. Oh, you can't fool me. They say it was an accident, but no one's that careless.
I'll bet he was drunk. Remember how he acted at that dance 2 years ago? Had to be carried home. Disgraceful.
Well, maybe this accident will teach that young scamp a lesson. He'll come to no good end, mark my words. He must have been drunk.
The actual truth of the matter was that Dennis hadn't been drinking at all that day. That accident cost him four fingers on his left hand and what remained of his reputation. His dad packed him off to normal school, but that didn't last more than a couple of years because he liked having a good time more than he liked studying. It was after that that he came to Chicago, and I gave him a job.
Mr. Davis, this is Dennis, my brother I was telling you about.
Oh, glad to know you, Dennis. George here tells me you want a job driving a cab.
That's right, Mr. Davis.
I think you could manage the cab stand in front of the hotel?
I'll try. When do I start?
I'll come around tomorrow morning.
I'll be here. Thanks a lot, Mr. Davis.
That's all right.
Thanks, Ed. Be soon.
Yeah, that's okay. Good night, George. See you in the morning, Dennis. Dennis did a good job for us right from the start. Pretty soon, I put him in charge of five loop hotel and club cab stands. Then he was slated to run the garage nights. But he never got that job. He celebrated it too soon and too hard.
Another pitcher of beer over here.
Beer? What do you want to drink that stuff for? Whiskey. That's a real drink. You don't want beer.
Hey, forget that beer stuff. Bring us another round of whiskey.
Make up your mind, will you?
Oh, Patty, dear, and did you hear the news that's going round? The shamrock is forbid by law to grow on Irish ground. Oh, I met with Napper Dandy, and he took me by the hand.
Of the angel.
She's the most distressful country that ever yet was seen.
You call that singing,
man? Hanging men and women there for wearing the...
What's the matter with my singing? Drink some whiskey. Then maybe you can do justice to an Irish tune.
Hey, yeah.
All right, now. All right, now. Let's try it again.
Oh, Patty, dear, and did you hear the news that's going round? The shamrock is forbid by law to grow on Irish ground.
There now, you've got it.
Well, he'd blown his chances for running the garage nights, so he went out to North Dakota to get a job harvesting wheat. He told me how he and a friend of his, Sam Kendler, took their earnings and went into the big city and spent it all on a bender. Dennis said the next thing he remembered was walking along a country road with Sam, his head splitting and an awful taste in his mouth.
How do you feel now?
Oh, terrible.
There's a little town a ways up the road, and we'll stop and get some ham and eggs and java.
How'd we get out here again?
A trucker gave us a lift.
I want to go back to Chicago. Sun's too bright out here.
Start walking, then. The railroad's 20 miles from here. I'm going on out west all the way.
I'd like to go west, but I'll go back to Chicago.
You're crazy, Dennis.
What do you mean?
You're crazy with your money. You throw it around town like it was water. You haven't got a cent in your pockets now, have you? You worked all summer and you haven't got a cent.
You're right. Not a cent.
No. You're wrong. Here's 30 bucks I took out of your pockets last night. I took it so you wouldn't be broke this morning.
Oh, thanks, Sam.
Now hang on to it. Don't spend it all on booze.
Of course, that's just exactly what he did do. Well, that's the way it went with Dennis O'Brien. He came back to Chicago and worked for me. He'd make dough and wake up to a good job. Then he'd get drunk and blow his chances all over again. Once, he got arrested in Toledo. They kept him in jail for 13 days, and when he got out, he soberly and sincerely declared,
"Never again. I'm never going to touch the stuff again. Never."
And he didn't. For 11 months. Then another time, he stayed sober for about 3.5 years. What's more, he was selling liquor then, too, part of the time. But as the years went on, Dennis got acquainted with more judges and more jails. He'd get good jobs and sleep in a flop house or in the park just so he'd have more money for whiskey. Finally, he got to the point where he knew all his good intentions weren't much good. He knew he couldn't stop drinking, no matter how much he wanted to. He knew he had to have help. And that's when he got in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous.
The man we've named Dennis O'Brien in this true story did find help through Alcoholics Anonymous. And to tell you that part of his story, he's here now to be interviewed by Clinton Duffy, warden of San Quentin Prison. Warden Duffy.
Just how was Alcoholics Anonymous able to help you?
For the first time in my life, I found a group of men and women who understood my problem and didn't condemn me. Instead, they welcomed me into their organization and made me feel at home among them.
Certainly, that is a big factor in AA success. I think the alcoholic has something in common with the former prison inmate. Each tries to get ahead and reestablish rapport with his community, only to find too often that prejudice and intolerance view his efforts with cynicism. Do you happen to know how much alcoholism costs us financially?
Well, the last figures I heard placed the annual economic loss at $1 billion, perhaps more.
Even in these days of tremendous sums, that's a lot of money. One authority claims that alcoholism costs around $188 million a year in crime. That, of course, is of particular interest in my field. So I'm interested in knowing what AA is doing about these figures.
AA's part, of course, Warden Duffy, is to help the alcoholic get back on his feet. Helping him, therefore, reduces the figures, but AA can't do the job alone.
What can others do?
They can spread the word about Alcoholic Anonymous. They can encourage alcoholic acquaintances to seek the help of an informed and sympathetic doctor. And they can help ease up the social pressure to drink.
And certainly no one should ever press a drink on someone reluctant to take it. He may be an alcoholic.
Well, Warden Duffy, I know it's the usual thing for the interviewer to ask the interviewee the question. But I'd like to ask you about the AA group you started at San Quentin.
And I'd be very glad to talk about it. I'd heard of the work AA was doing, and since over half of all jail commitments are the result of alcoholism in one degree or another, I felt it would be worthwhile to start an AA group at San Quentin Prison. I think the results are rather startling. Before we had the group there, many of the parolees returned to prison. After AA came into the institution, the reduction in returns of those who had studied AA while in prison has been considerably reduced. That fact alone is one of the many reasons I have for recommending the work of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Well, thank you, Warden Clinton Duffy, for appearing as interviewer. And so another person finds happiness in a new way of life, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. This organization is nonprofit, non-sectarian, and non-political. It takes no stand whatever on the wet or dry issues. Remember, alcoholism is a disease. You need help to conquer it, just as you'd need help if you had tuberculosis. So if you have a drinking problem and are interested in finding help, sit down now and write for information to Alcoholics Anonymous in care of this station. Sign your name, address, and telephone number, and send your note to Alcoholics Anonymous in care of the station to which you are listening. This program, produced by WWJ, the Detroit News, was broadcast in the public interest. Alcoholics Anonymous will bring you the true story of another member of their unique organization of ex-drinkers next week at this same time. We invite you to be with us then.
Poor little tykes. They really don't have a decent home at all. Would be glad when having to work to buy bread and milk for them. Oh, it just makes my heart ache to see those poor Gladwin children. What chance will they ever have in life? Oh, I'd worry if I were her. They might turn out bad. It was the pity of those undoubtedly well-meaning but gossipy neighbors that got under my skin when I was only 10 years old. If resentment can be the basis of alcoholism, I was a cinch to become an alcoholic.
Alcoholics Anonymous, that unique organization of ex-drinkers, dedicates this program to the men and women who have successfully returned from the outer rim of living to a new way of life. Theirs are the stories of personal victories over the disease that is alcoholism, an obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body. Alcoholics Anonymous brings you the true story of a woman we've named Jean Burke. Hers is the story of a woman who suffered for years from the disease of alcoholism until she discovered the arresting agent for her obsession in the program of the 12 Steps.
Since my mother had to work to support us, there were four children and I was the eldest, there was no one to take our part against the bullies in the neighborhood. As a result, we had to take more than our share of abuse.
Cry, baby.
Say, what did you do to Jimmy?
I didn't do nothing. All I did was push him, like this.
Ouch! Don't you push me.
You can't go home and tell your mother, because your mother isn't home.
Come on, Jimmy. We'll go home anyway.
Well, the best self-defense I could think of was to become a bully myself.
Come on, Jeannie. I bet you can't climb to the top platform on the outside.
Bet you I can.
Jeannie, come on and play with me, will you?
I'll go home and see your mother.
Oh, please, Jeannie.
Go away.
Oh, that hurt.
Cry, baby. Cry, baby. Run home and tell your mother.
By the time I was 15, I'd finished grade school and started to work. I wouldn't have anything to do with the kids in my own neighborhood. And since I was a good dancer and took part in several amateur shows, I got to know a young crowd in a better part of New York City. Come in.
Hi.
Hi.
Jeannie, gosh, you were great in the show tonight.
Yeah. Well, hi yourself. Oh, golly, I'm glad you could come.
You were great.
Oh, yes, was. When are you going on Broadway, Jeannie? Oh, my goodness, I'm not that good by a long shot.
Oh.
Hey, sit down. Oh, here, you can just toss that costume on the screen.
Oh, I'm so impressed. You having your own dressing room and everything.
Well, that's just because there wasn't room for me down with the chorus.
Look, we're all going back to my house and have a party. We want you to come.
Oh, me especially. You're going to be my girl tonight, Jeannie.
I am, Dick.
But definitely.
Oh, you take that Monopoly game you play too seriously, Dick. Oh, how long before you'll be ready, Jeannie? I'll clear these two out of here and help you dress if you want.
Oh, it won't take me a sec. All I have to do is take my makeup off and change my dress.
In the meantime, oh, Clem, be helpful and go find us in gym. Oh, I know there's not a drop in the house, and Dad hasn't had time to make any more in the bathtub. Run along now.
Okay, we'll be back in Denver.
And don't keep us waiting.
Oh, here. I'll help you, Jeannie, with your dress.
All right.
Golly, I bet you're ready for my nip from the flask after all that dancing on stage tonight. Well, you do drink, don't you?
Oh, sure. Once in a while. It's so hard to get any really good liquor with prohibition.
Who told you?
No one had to tell me. Can I get you another slug of gin?
I'd like a shot of whiskey better.
That not impossible wish that shall command my heart and me.
Oh.
If y'all won't mind a little transposition, I shall be back immediately.
Oh, now, who's he? Dick.
Oh.
Dick, darling.
Come on,
wake up and tell me, who is that man?
Now, see here, Jeannie, I don't mind waking up, being waked up, but I definitely do not like to be waked up to identify a bloke from Eli.
Just because you're from Princeton, are you going to fight about it?
No, not if I can help it. Thirsty?
Yes. Oh, yes, I'm parched.
Oh, well, why didn't you say so? I'll go get you a drink right now.
Yes, you do that.
Here we are. First aid for dry tonsils.
Oh, thank you.
Look, Jeannie, we're having a dance at the fraternity house next Friday. Can you come?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, wonderful. It's a date. Let's drink to it.
So I had a wonderful time. During the day, I worked as a model in a Fifth Avenue shop. And as I paraded around in silks and satins, I thought of the kids in my neighborhood. They had jobs as bricklayers or telephone operators. And at night, I went to dances with boys from Princeton and Yale. There was always lots to drink, and I found it gave me a wonderful feeling. I forgot that I was a kid with a widowed mother and sadly lacking in education. Yes, the little kid the mothers used to pity was doing all right for herself. And then, when I was 18, I ran away with a boy of 19 and married him. His mother didn't exactly approve, but she was kind to me. She treated me like her own daughter. But this was during Prohibition, and our smart set had cocktails at luncheon and bridge. I wanted to belong, so I did more than my share of drinking, in spite of my mother-in-law's advice.
Do you really think you need that highball?
I'm thirsty.
Why not try a glass of water?
I like the taste of whiskey better. Is there anything wrong with that?
Certainly, we all drink in our crowd. But I've noticed lately that you drink quite heavily at times. Perhaps more heavily than you realize.
Paul hasn't complained?
No, nor am I complaining. It just rather worries me. You know, some people just can't drink. It does something to them. I think it must be an illness with them. And I wouldn't want you to get sick.
Despite her friendly warning, I continued to do as I pleased as regards drinking. Having a maid freed me from the responsibilities of caring for my home and child, so I had plenty of time to drink. Paul began to worry and to nag me about it,
He tried every way he knew to get me to stop.
Oh, why doesn't she come home? Where on earth could she be? Jean. Jean, is that you?
Hello, Paul.
Jean, you swore to me you'd stay home today, but you wouldn't go to that cocktail party.
I changed my mind.
Look at you. Look at you. Your hat's knocked half off. Your hair's stringing down. You were drunk when you tried to put on your lipstick. Boy, you look like something off 10th Avenue.
I don't like your talking to me like that. I'm coming in here. Paul, no, please, go away.
I'm going to beat some sense into you. You're not going to ruin your life and mine and the baby's by drinking. Stop it, do you hear me? Stop it, don't you ever drink again. I can't stand it. Oh, Gina.
I can't help it, Paul. I just can't seem to help it. But I'll try to stop.
The woman we've named Jean Burke in this true story tried every way she heard of to stop drinking, but without success, until she joined AA. To tell you of her return to sobriety, she's here now to be interviewed by Miss Ida Lippman, Detroit attorney and former sergeant in the Women's Division of the Detroit Police Department. Miss Lippman.
Just how did you try to stop drinking before you joined AA?
I promised my husband I wouldn't drink. I tried going. I tried to work. To keep myself busy so I wouldn't have time to think about liquor. I tried going to church. My husband moved here thinking if I got away from my drinking companions, I'd stop. But instead of going out to drink, I stayed home and drank.
I'm assuming that you had no outside trouble with your drinking. Do you think that fact kept you drinking longer than you might have otherwise?
It's possible, although I did have trouble outside of my home because of my drinking. I was picked up by the police one night and taken to the women's detention home, and it certainly was a terrible experience.
But you're now one of the lucky people who has found your way back to sobriety through AA. As an attorney, I, of course, see a great many people in the divorce court. Right now, we're hearing a great deal of talk about divorces that are the result of war marriages. That may be true, but I know that most of the divorce cases that come before the courts are caused in some degree by alcoholism. This disease is the greatest factor in breaking up homes, and that is why I believe Alcoholics Anonymous should be encouraged and helped in their work for their saving many homes that otherwise would be broken.
Well, thank you, Miss Lippman, for appearing as interviewer. And so another victim of alcoholism regained sobriety thanks to the help of AA. Alcoholics Anonymous is a nonprofit, non-sectarian, and non-political organization. It takes no stand whatever on the wet or dry issue. Remember, alcoholism is a disease. You need help to conquer it, just as you'd need help if you had tuberculosis. So, if you are having a drinking problem and want help, write now for information to Alcoholics Anonymous in care of the station. Sign your name, address, and telephone number, and send your note to Alcoholics Anonymous in care of the station to which you are listening. This program, produced by WWJ, the Detroit News, was broadcast in the public interest. Alcoholics Anonymous will bring you the true story of another member of their unique organization of ex-drinkers next week at the same time. We invite you to be with us then.